seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you. Set to kick off a brand new week. We have a lot of local sports that we're going to have to dive into this week. For one, we had a phenomenal weekend of local high school baseball and softball. Phenomenal. The Carbon Dino baseball team falls one win short of a state championship. They won six games in 3 days to put themselves in that position. Just think about how difficult that is. Six games in 3 days with a pitch count. They forced a decisive game against Grantsville and at that point in time just ran out of gas. But that's a great Carbon baseball team that was so close to winning a state championship, easily recording more wins than any other team at the state championship tournament. I was just floored by their performance. I thought it was spectacular. Later on in the week, we will catch up with Coach Jeff Cincinnatus to talk about what he saw from this team. And I would never speak for a coach, but I will say that I know Coach Cincinnatus has got to be so pleased with the way that his team performed. So that'll be later on in the week. The Carbon Lady Dino softball team comes one game short of getting into the state championship, and both Emory baseball and Emory softball compete into Friday. I just thought it was a great weekend. Both schools represented the Castle Country to the fullest, and those kids deserve all the credit in the world. So we'll start recapping the baseball season a little bit later on this week here on Drive Time Sports. Today we will talk track and field because it was historical for Carbon High. For the first time ever, both the boys and the girls claimed region championships. How about that? We'll be joined by Coach Jim Jukes next segment here on Drive Time Sports. Also today we have to start talking NBA basketball. The playoffs are set somewhat. Now we have the play-in tournament, and the play-in tournament is going to be highlighted by the Lakers and the Warriors Wednesday night, 8 p.m. LeBron and Steph Curry in the play-in tournament. You couldn't write a script better than that. What does it mean for the Utah Jazz? Well, I believe that the Jazz were one Clipper tank away from having the perfect bracket, the perfect route to the NBA championship. I truly believe that. And I asked the question on Twitter earlier today, how confident are Jazz fans that this team will hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy? This has just been a near picture-perfect season for the Jazz outside of the injury to Donovan Mitchell. Will that play a factor? And we'll look at the route that Utah has to take to get to the championship. That's coming up in just a bit on Drive Time Sports as well. Now, let's start by talking about horse racing. There will be no Triple Crown talk as we prepare now for the Belmont after Medina Spirit came up in third place at the Preakness over the weekend. But that doesn't mean that Bob Baffert is out of the headlines, because Bob Baffert was suspended today from entering horses at New York racetracks pending an investigation into the Kentucky Derby win from Medina Spirit. Now, Baffert temporarily will not be allowed to stable any horses at Belmont Park or any other racetrack in New York. That's according to the Racing Association. The ban includes races at Belmont, and the Belmont Stakes is coming up on June 5th. That means no Medina Spirit. Now, I'm going to ask this question. Would this have gone in today had Medina Spirit won the Preakness? No way. No way. No way would New York Racing Association officials take away the idea of a Triple Crown, which is rare. Even though we've seen it a couple of times over the last 5-6 years, it took forever before we saw Justified American Pharoah do it. There's no way that New York would keep that marketability out of their association leading up to the Belmont. I refuse to believe it. But as of right now, no Medina Spirit in the Preakness. Other than that, not a lot going on in the national sports front, but we can take a look at the schedule in Major League Baseball. Short slate of games coming up. We begin in the 4 o'clock hour here in about 30 minutes. The Giants will travel on the road to take on the Reds. 5 o'clock, ESPN nationally televised game. The Mets travel on the road to meet the Atlanta Braves. We get the White Sox and the Twins in the 5 o'clock hour, as well as Washington at Chicago. 6:05 tonight, the Rangers will take on the Yankees. New York putting Giancarlo Stanton on the IL. Bad news for the Yankees. This guy cannot stay healthy. That's been the reoccurring theme since he put on pinstripes. Cleveland will be at the Angels tonight at 7:38. 8 o'clock, the Dodgers will take on the Arizona Diamondbacks, and there's a great chance that we see Albert Pujols in Dodger blue. He made it official today, had a press conference, as he has officially joined the Dodgers, who may need him. Now with Corey Seager going out for at least a month at shortstop, the Dodgers have the versatile Max Muncy. They'll probably move him to second, Chris Taylor over to shortstop. That opens up first base for Albert Pujols. So there is a path for him to see some playing time in Dodger blue. Coming up at 8:10 tonight, we have the Rockies and the Padres, and then also the Tigers and the Mariners. So that's what we have on tap for you today. We're going to talk NBA basketball. We're going to talk local track and field. Coach Jim Jukes will join us in just a bit. Plenty coming up on this brand new week of Drive Time Sports, right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the...
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Well, we've approached the final week of the spring sports season. It's amazing how fast spring goes. Winter drags out for so long, spring so condensed. One sport remaining, that's track and field. And for the Carbon Dinos, there's a lot to get excited about as we enter the state championship this Friday and Saturday. We'll talk about a region championship on both the boys and the girls side of the track. And joining us right now to do that, we have Coach Jim Jukes over the phone. Coach, as always, a pleasure. I appreciate the time again today. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jordan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk with you, Coach. And to be honest, sometimes I enjoy the conversations off the air as much as I do on the air. Coach, I know that this past week it was an historical weekend for your track and field squad. You guys performed beautifully, and you did something that no other track and field team has ever accomplished in Carbon High School history.
Yeah, you know, winning both the girls and boys side, we went back and looked through the trophy case and stuff, and it's never happened at Carbon High where the boys and girls have won the region championship in the same year. And, I mean, it was just kind of a cap to everything that's been going on at Carbon High. You know, you had, I mean, 5 region titles up at Carbon High in the spring sports. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it definitely is, Coach. And we can talk about the performances over the weekend. It's not a surprise to anyone that the girls went in. So let's start here. The girls go in, they dominate 234-109. Again, no surprise. These girls have just been dominant all year long. And there's even been times, as you have said, you've kind of held them back, and they have still found ways to get victories. So this was no surprise.
No, it really wasn't. I think the only surprise would be is, you know, how big of a margin it would have been. I didn't anticipate it being quite that big of a margin. But, you know, we had some great things happen. Our distance group has been absolutely solid for us all year on that girl side, and it's been a lot of fun. And then to sweep all 3 relays, I got to give Coach Blank a lot of credit with the relay group there. Getting that done on the girl side, that was quite the accomplishment.
Coach, as far as some of the top performers, let's talk about that, because you guys had to succeed in pretty much every single event, and you had mentioned the relays and the way the girls had performed in that regard as well. And so when you look at this dominating effort, where does it start and where does it finish?
Well, you know, I think it starts on the distance side. I think Beverly Lancaster for us has been amazing on the distance side. She's come on really strong for us, done a lot of good things there, but she's not just the only person there that helps out. You've got, you know, you've got a whole group of kids, a bunch of kids there. You got Aaron Stromness that's in there. You got Ambry Jones that's in there. You've got a lot of kids that can come through and help us out in a big way. And, you know, on that side, you got, you know, Sophie Taylor has been amazing. She's done all 3 events there. And then you go down to 800, you get McKenna Blink in the mix. And it's just, it's a deep distance group. And I think that's kind of where things kind of fit for us to start with. But you switch over onto the sprints, and you got Amani Elliott in the hurdles. You got her in the sprints. You got Haley Prescott in the jumps and Sadie Johnson in the jumps. And I mean, we're just deep everywhere you look. And then our throws group has been one of the biggest complete groups I've had since coaching. This throws group has been a lot of fun to coach with Mariah and Kayla and Liz Pugliese and a lot of these girls over there that have just kind of held that group together and done a lot of good things.
Yeah, Coach, historically, when you look not only at Carbon, but you look at other teams throughout the state, it always seems to me that the throwing categories are typically where you either A, make a move, or B, lose a lot of ground. And I mean, just historically looking at the way things shape out, that's where schools can make some money, and that's where schools can really lose.
Right, you know, and that's the thing is I think a lot of times with track, you get coaches that focus so much on the track and they forget about the field element. And when you get those throwers and they can stand up and you can get those places over there, it's huge. And when you get a throws group like we've got, you know, Coach Johnson has done a great job over there with those, with that group. I got to give her a lot of credit. She's had them throwing the discus a lot, shot put a lot, you know, and they're doing great in the javelins. But when you're deep in those, we're deep in everything on the girl side. And when you are, the score gets pretty lopsided in a hurry.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad. Coach, we'll continue on with the girls. How difficult was it to make sure you're placing these kids in the right events, knowing that you are this deep and you have several girls that could compete in way more than four events? How difficult was that ahead of region?
It was a little bit. We had to strategize, you know, where we wanted to put girls in. The neat thing about that was because we were able to strategize, we didn't have to sacrifice our relays. A lot of times when you're chasing a region title, you have to make the decision early. You got to be like, are we going to put our best athletes in relays, or are we going to put them in opens? Because we are so deep, we're able to run our good athletes in the relays. And so that made it a little bit easier to do that. And it opened up some opportunities for some other kids to kind of get qualified in some individual events.
Coach, let's move over to the boys' side. Now, while it was not a surprise that the girls took home the region crown, I know that there was some tough sledding for the boys. In fact, you look at the point total, 150.5 to 142, topping Richfield by just 8.5 points. My goodness, that is such a slim margin. I know 8.5 sounds like a lot, but it certainly is not.
No, it wasn't. And it just about got even thinner. If we would have had a problem in our 4x4, we could have only won by 0.5 point. The boys' side, you know, we looked at it, we strategized. I had a lot of sleepless nights over it. Coach Jeff Blank had a lot of sleepless nights over it as well. We strategized through it and said, hey, you know, how can we get in there? And we decided to pull a lot of our sprinters out of the open sprints and throw them in the relays to make our relays a little bit tougher. Made some strategic moves with things. We threw Ashton Ferguson in the high jump. He hadn't jumped all year. Pulled 1.5 there. He was just trying to sneak some points here and there to help our teams out. And we had to have some surprises. You know, Caleb Winfrey wins the high jump, which we didn't have him doing, and that was awesome. And then him and Riker Childs go 1 and 2 in the long jump. And the long jump was probably one of the biggest events for us because Richfield didn't calculate that in at the end.
Coach, I mean this in the most respectful way. Okay, I want to make that clear. This is in no way any disrespect. Is it a little bit more entertaining to coach the boys this year, knowing that the girls have been so dominant and you actually have to finagle and think of ways to get creative to score points on the boys' side? And again, I mean no disrespect with that question, but the girls have been that dominant.
Yeah, it was rather interesting. Usually, like, we're trying to strategize both sides. The girls' side, we knew what we were going to do, and we had a conversation, I think, early in the year after our first meet. I had the Richfield coaches call me up on the girls' side and actually told me congratulations on a region title. Clear back there. They could see my dominance then. But with the boys' side, it was a lot of fun. We got to strategize. And the thing is to have a boys' team that we were deep, but we weren't dominant in any particular area. We had Riker Childs. It's just, he's been phenomenal this year. But we had a lot of guys that were willing to step up and do a lot of the nitty-gritty stuff that needed to be done, and it worked out. You know, our throwers, again, were big there. Our distance kids were big. And Kobe Cruz and Easton Humes on the distance side. Pierce Briner was awesome. I mean, we had a lot of kids step up and do a lot of good things for us.
Again, Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbondano Track and Field Squad, our guest right now. Coach, let's jump ahead and talk about state. Now that region is in the rear view, I mean, how much flexibility do you have as far as state qualifiers and where you can put kids? And I guess just in comparison to what we've seen in years past.
We got quite a bit of flexibility. We kind of got it set where we want to be. We look at where our kids are ranking at state, and then we try to place them. You know, we have a couple of kids like Beverly Lancaster that we could use in five different events. We got to cut her back to four. Haley Prescott's the same way. Emily Elliott, we could easily do that with as well. We could have done that with McKenna Blank, and we didn't. But I think we look at that and we say, what do we want to go after? I mean, I think we want to go get a 4x1 region or state title. That is one of our priorities. We think that we can probably pull that off. We think actually all three of our girl relays are going to do very well. And, Haley Prescott wants to go get a state championship in the high jump, but she doesn't just have other teams to go compete with. She's got Sadie Johnson on the same team that wants the same things. And so it's kind of fun when the kids intertwined that are going to go after that. You know, long jump's the same way. Her and Sadie could both potentially, either one of them could end up winning a state title there. Emily could sneak in there and get a state title. And so it's a lot of fun. I think we've got them all in the events that you just kind of got to put them in and let it shake out how it's going to shake out.
Coach, this year, I know it is a little bit different. The venue is going to be at Davis High School. It's not at BYU. We saw that already on the swim side of things. Does a change of venue mean anything at all when looking at the landscape of the state tournament in your mind?
It does. It's actually a huge impact on the way the state meet will run for us, because they've developed a few new things up there. They're going to have coaching boxes, which is BYU never allows. So that'll be nice where we can have a little bit more interaction with our athletes during state while they're competing. I think that'll be a huge thing for us. Javelin will be thrown off the grass instead of off of a runway, which will be a different kind of thing. So moving up to Davis is going to be interesting. But I think, weather is going to be an impact. It's supposed to be a really cool, colder, potentially rainy kind of weekend next weekend. And so between you and me and everybody else, I would like to see a miserable day that day, because I think my athletes, I think they're ready. I think they can go take on any team, and having weather won't impact them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, weather can work one of two ways, right? I mean, you can have kids that excel in cold weather. You can have kids that don't excel in cold weather. It all depends on the makeup of the team. And so obviously, as you just alluded to, you would like it more miserable, more cold, more wet.
Yeah, and the reason I say that is I know what my team, we went down to that grand meet earlier in the year, and man, they came out and performed. And I don't think weather is an impact with my team. We've been through some really crazy meets with wind and rain and snow this year, and so I think we may be one of the tougher teams when it comes to weather aspects, whereas sometimes you get teams like Delta and some of those teams that are those higher end, they kind of pick and choose to miss those meets to get to really nice weather meets. And so I think doing the hard weather meets makes your team a little bit tougher.
Coach, we'll end with this. Leading up to this weekend, how do you handle it? How do you handle the kids in practice? How hard do you push them, and how much relax time do you give them?
We'll go a little bit today. We'll push a little bit hard today, but we really are trying to relax. That was one of the things, we talked about it 2 weeks ago. We didn't go to BYU because we wanted to back off and let them rest. That turned out to be a great idea, and the fact that our kids really outperformed where we thought they were going to be. We want to get a little bit on them on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday and Thursday is more of just kind of making sure we want them to feel like their legs are 100%. We don't want to have anybody with nagging injuries and stuff, and so anybody that's still kind of hurting, we'll go light on, but everybody else will kind of work and get a little bit on them. But right now it's all about getting healthy before state.
Well, Coach, congratulations again on the historical region championship performance from both the boys and the girls. Boy, it's been a lot of fun to follow you guys all year long, and I know we'll gear up for this weekend. Looking forward to it. Thank you again for the time.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Again, that's Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbondino Track and Field Squad State Championship coming up this weekend. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
The The NBA playoffs are set, sort of. We still have these stupid play-in round games, which I think could be a huge, huge benefit for the Utah Jazz. And I want to talk about that, their route to the NBA championship and how plausible it really is. I mean, this is a good basketball team. 52-20. The Jazz win 52 games in a 72-game season. It's impressive. Best record in the NBA. And I know that there have been times this season I've been down on the Jazz. It's not that I'm down on Utah. I'm not down on them. But there's so many questions into this season. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, A, we had such a shortened offseason. B, it's 72 games. And C, player health. That's been my biggest question mark about this NBA season. I've said a million times here on the show that play in the league has been sluggish over the course of the regular season. Now, I tip my hat to Quinn Snyder and the Utah Jazz. Because in a league where we saw the Brooklyn Nets use load management, the Clippers use load management, and regardless if the Lakers want to cover load management with injuries, they did. They used load management this year. I firmly believe that. Utah did not. They approached most games as if they were must wins, and because of that, the Jazz outshine Phoenix by one game to earn the one seed. Let me ask you this. How valuable is the one seed this year? This is why the play-in game could potentially work out in favor of Utah. Without the play-in round, the Jazz would be going up against Golden State right out of the gate. Golden State beat Utah 2 out of 3 games in the regular season. I don't care anything about that. Like I said, the regular season was so wishy-washy. I don't care about season series. It doesn't mean anything to me. Look at this matchup on paper. Should Utah beat Golden State in a 7-game set? Yes. Yes. I give Golden State 1, maybe 2 games, absolute most, in a 7-game set with the Jazz. But they could play the Lakers. Because the Lakers are the 7 seed. If they were to lose to Golden State on Wednesday, they would have to beat either Memphis or San Antonio to get in, and then they are the 8 seed. Could the Jazz beat the Lakers in a 7-game set? Yes. Would they be favored to? No. They just wouldn't. We're talking about the defending champs, and the starters missed over 90 games this season. Now, I believe the Lakers will be dealing with chemistry issues, and that plays in favor of the Jazz. But, on the positive note, you could play Memphis, you could play San Antonio. You could get the 9 or the 10 seed as the 1 this year. So, to be determined on what the path for the Jazz looks like in getting to the NBA Finals. If it's anyone but the Lakers, I think Utah makes relatively quick work of Golden State, Memphis, or San Antonio, even though Steph Curry has put together an incredible season. I have not seen an individual season like this since Kobe Bryant, the year he scored 81 points, and the Lakers took the Suns 7 games in the first round when they were a 7 seed. I haven't seen an individual take over a game offensively and carry a team plagued by injuries or with a lack of talent since then. It's been roughly 15 years since we have seen this. Curry has been that good. Utah still handles them in a 7-game set. So let's look at the path for Utah if all things stay equal. And what I mean by that, if the Lakers beat Golden State Wednesday and then Golden State tops either Memphis or San Antonio, it's 1 through 8. It's set the way it is right now. The path for the Jazz looks something like this. Golden State, then the Clippers or the Mavericks to get to the Western Conference Finals, where it could be Phoenix, Denver, LA, or Portland. Here's what worries me about the path for the Utah Jazz. The Clippers went full tank mode yesterday in the regular season finale. Well, that was dreadful if you didn't see that tank mode. This is one of the things I'm talking about, the regular season. I mean, do you think that the Clippers lost to the Thunder outright? No. Patrick Patterson played 42 minutes yesterday. Ivaka Zubac did not even log a single minute. He had 1 foul. Tip-off came out of the game. There was no Nicholas Batum, no Kawhi Leonard, no Marcus Morris, no Rajon Rondo, no Paul George. The Clippers did not try to win that game. Why did the Clippers do that? I believe the Clippers wanted to avoid LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the Lakers. I truly believe that. And I guess you have earned the right, via tanking, to dictate your own path. The Clippers viewed the Mavericks as a better first-round matchup than potentially going up against LeBron James. Or, for that matter, Damian Lillard. Because if the Clippers win yesterday, they're the 3 seed. But then you're looking ahead, even if the Lakers are the 7 and they beat Phoenix, you get the Lakers in the second round. Yeah, I believe the Clippers tanked intentionally. And if you're a Jazz fan, you can take that as an insult if you want. I think it has more to do with the idea of playing the Mavericks in the first round than it does the Blazers or Lakers. I believe that. That's how close the Jazz were from a perfect bracket. Because unless it's the Lakers in round one, I pick Utah to end that series quick. 5-6 games, most. Second round, they get the Clippers or the Mavericks. And I'm telling you right now, the Mavericks are not going to beat the Clippers in a 7-game set. It's not going to happen. It's the Clippers in the second round. And that is the team over the last month, the team that I have been most impressed with in the Western Conference. The team that went out, made the right moves at the deadline, grabbed DeMarcus Cousins, made a trade for Rajon Rondo. That's a team that was strategically built for the NBA playoffs. They went out and got the missing pieces. I love what the Clippers did at the trade deadline. I do. And in my mind, they are the team to beat in the Western Conference. Now, you could say, well, yeah, they'll go Clipper again. Nah, it's a different team. It's a different team with different leadership. That's the only thing that keeps the Jazz from having a perfect route. Here's what worries me. When the Jazz get past the Warriors, Grizzlies, or Spurs, they will have to take on the Clippers, and then more than likely have to take on the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. If by chance the Warriors beat the Lakers on Wednesday, Utah would have to go through the Lakers in a 7-game set, and then get through the Clippers in a 7-game set. And I believe that is going to be extremely difficult for anyone to beat those two teams 8 times in 14 games. That's tough to do. And then you talk about the injuries to Donovan Mitchell. I'm not overly concerned about this, because when Mitchell is out of the floor, this Jazz team is just a different beast. Now, he's been out indefinitely for over a month now. It was April 16th when he went down with an injury against the Pacers. And the Jazz believe he will return for the postseason. I guess there's reason for concern, because Mike Conley has also been dealing with an injury. But honestly, I think the Jazz will be just fine in the opening round. I believe we'll see Donovan Mitchell game 2 if needed. Maybe he misses game 1. You can kind of fill out the process, get him back when he's healthy. See, this isn't like Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, because the Jazz did not embrace load management during the regular season. I think it's easier for Donovan Mitchell to come back and step in to the starting lineup opposed to those guys when teams were tinkering with chemistry and adding pieces. Utah didn't do that. They didn't add key pieces. They didn't add a DeMarcus Cousins or a Rajon Rondo or an Andre Drummond. They didn't do that. So, to me, it's easier for Donovan Mitchell to get back into the lineup, find a groove, and Utah not to miss a beat. But again, I worry about that path. Any other year, you would look at the 1 seed and say, that's the best team in the NBA. That's the best team in that conference. I don't know that number 1 or number 2 are the best in the West, with it being Utah or Phoenix. And that has everything to do with the variables that this NBA season presented. I mean, look, for Jazz fans, I want this team to go far in the NBA playoffs. Trust me, I want them to. I just have serious questions about it. And I don't necessarily feel the same way in the Eastern Conference. I thought going into the season, on paper, it was easy to predict. Philadelphia looked like the best team. Then Brooklyn added James Harden. Okay, maybe they're the best team. They're 1-2. Brooklyn never really played Durant, Kyrie, and Harden at the same time. Brooklyn comes in at 2. Okay, I can buy that. You want to tell me Brooklyn's the best team of the East? I buy that. Milwaukee at 3? Yeah, maybe. They have arguably the best player in the league in Giannis. Okay. After that, though, no one's taking New York serious. Who's taking Atlanta, Miami, Boston, Washington, Indiana, or Charlotte really that serious? I don't think anyone is. In the West, I got the mindset that the 4 seed may be the best team in the Western Conference, and that's the Clippers. I can't believe I'm saying that, by the way. My goodness. I'm actually on Drive Time Sports saying the Clippers may be the best team in the West.
Ugh.
But I feel that way. I think there's a case to be made for the Lakers at 7. And if the Warriors do get in, Steph Curry can win one or two games on his own. He has played that well. Can he win an entire series? No. We've seen that before in the past. You look at some of the best individual seasons we have ever seen. Michael Jordan struggled to put together wins in the playoffs before Pippen. Not an indictment on Jordan. He was by far the best player on that team, really lacked a supporting cast, and eventually that catches up. Same thing with Kobe Bryant, 06. Best player in the world. The guy outscored the Dallas Mavericks at 62 points through three quarters. Scored 81 in a game. The Lakers could take Phoenix to 7. They got blown out in Game 7. It's hard for one player to win a series. But when you look at teams, when you look at the team aspect, in the West, I like Utah. I like the Clippers. I like the Lakers. I think those are the three best teams. And the worst part for Utah, they happen to be on the same side of the bracket as the Clippers and possibly the Lakers if things go wrong on Wednesday night. So if I'm a Jazz fan, I'm rooting for the Lakers on Wednesday night. I don't want any part of that team in the first round because there's no way Memphis or San Antonio will beat a LeBron and Anthony Davis team. That's not going to happen. A chance Steph Curry can get you one. I don't think he can get you four. He can get you one. I think the Jazz have to root for the Lakers on Wednesday night. Let's take a quick commercial break. Again, I asked the question on Twitter. How confident are you on a scale of 1 to 10 with the Jazz potentially winning a championship? I'll read some of the replies when we return, and you can answer again at Jordan_DTS on Twitter. How confident are you that the Jazz will win the NBA championship? Scale of 1 to 10, give me a number. We're back with more Drive Time Sports right after this.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
I asked the question on Twitter, how confident are you on a scale of 1 to 10 that the Utah Jazz will win the NBA championship now that we know they are the number one seed in the Western Conference? I got some great answers from Jazz fans. I'll read some of those in just a moment. Bring in Travis Anderson as well. Travis, how confident are you that the Utah Jazz win the whole thing?
So they got home court throughout.
And again, I'm asking on a 1 to 10 scale. So when you weigh everything, the fact that they have home court, they may play the Lakers in the first round. I think they get Golden State in the first round.
The Lakers are going to throttle the Warriors.
I think so, too. So, yeah, looking at everything right now, how confident are you? Scale of 1 to 10, Utah wins it all.
4. I think 4 is a fair number. Their path got a little bit more difficult with the Clippers tanking because it was set up nicely. If the Clippers somehow pulled that game out yesterday and they won, they would have been the 3. Denver would have fell to the 4. I think that would have been perfect for the Jazz to get through the Warriors. And then you possibly have Denver and Dallas. That would have been perfect for them.
That would have been a perfect bracket.
But now with the Clippers, you're going to have to go through the Warriors, possibly the Clippers, and then the Lakers to get to the NBA Finals. It's not going to happen. Not playing the LA teams back-to-back if that's how it breaks.
Yeah, you would have to beat them 8 times in 14 games.
It's not happening. And the,
I don't know if anyone could do that,
honestly. Yeah, and if the Lakers get to the Western Conference Finals, because I think they're going to, because that broke perfectly for them getting Phoenix.
Isn't that something?
And then possibly Denver and Portland. They have no excuses not to get out of those two rounds of the playoff.
You know, I was talking during football about how things just always break for Tom Brady. Similar for LeBron James.
And you know how I felt about the Lakers all year. I have no confidence in that
team. No, you have no confidence in them, no.
And now, looking at the way that the bracket broke, I mean, my confidence level went from 0 to about 80%.
Okay, so again, I asked that question on Twitter. I got some great answers. Here's one. This one comes from Mikey. He says, I think there are 6 teams that have a chance to win it all, and I think they all have nearly identical chances to win it. So I think the Jazz have about a 1 in 6 chance of winning it all. That would actually go even with your 4, right?
Yeah, so we're saying 6 teams. So we're saying what? Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Jazz, Lakers, Clippers?
I did ask for clarification. And he said, LA, Utah, Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee,
back and forth on Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix doesn't have a chance. There's just, Phoenix does not match up well if they end up getting the Lakers. That is the worst possible matchup scenario for the Suns. They have no size. Davis will average 30 in that series, Lakers in five.
This one comes in from Greg. He says his confidence level is a 4. He says, I think Mitchell having been out so long, questions about the path in the LA teams and all the jockeying that was going on the last few weeks are all big question marks from a team that does not have a top five player to begin with. Again, that is a very reasonable response.
It's true. They don't have a top five player. They don't have a top 10 player. You can make the case maybe borderline top 20. And you have to have top 10 players or top five players to win in this league.
Steve says, I'm more confident in the Warriors winning again than the Jazz winning at all. So I guess his confidence is a 0. Because, I just don't know that you can win a series with one player in the NBA anymore. I don't believe that. We've had instances, dating all the way back to the 80s, we've had instances. And Steph Curry has had one of the best seasons that I've seen in over a decade. I can't believe he's not the favorite to win MVP. I think he's been that great this year.
He should be. But I was on the Joker for most of the season, but Steph Curry's the MVP.
I agree.
And the Warriors have played the Jazz really well this season, taking 2 of 3.
I'd throw those out, though. The regular season had so many variables to it that it's really hard to look at a season series and say yay or nay in my mind.
But the Jazz are going to get through it against the Warriors.
They'll get through the Warriors in 5 or 6 games.
Yeah.
Dustin says, all depends on how healthy we are and the other teams are. He's sticking to his finals prediction of the Jazz and the Bucks. Lakers beat Golden State Wednesday night. They have an easy path to the Western Conference, right? Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they're going to get either, if they win, which I expect them to win, they're going to get the Suns, which they beat the Suns, 2 weeks ago without LeBron, without Schroeder. Easily beat the Suns. And then they're going to get Denver, Portland.
Yeah.
The Lakers are going to be in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, it's an easy path.
Yeah.
So the Clippers tanking last night, I can't put into words how bad that was for Utah.
Yeah, it set them up, with the second round matchup against the Clippers. And I don't like that matchup for the Jazz going against the Clippers because they have two top 10 players or top 15 players.
So it seems like the consensus from what everyone is saying online, seems like the consensus is a 4.
That's where I'm at as a 4.
And that's where you're at as well, 4. And I can buy that. I think it's got to be higher than a 1, 2, or 3 just because you have home court advantage. They've proven that this is one of the best teams in the NBA. But I like Greg's thought that they don't have a top 5 player. I like that. You would have to go back. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I think you got to go back to the Pistons in 2004. The last team that did not have a top 5 player win an NBA championship.
Yeah, because after that, you had Duncan, you had Kobe, you had LeBron. You
had Shaq and Wade.
You had Shaq and Wade. You had, Dirk.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's a great point.
Curry, LeBron again. So, you have to have those top guys, and the Jazz don't.
And home court advantage. Notice they upped the attendance capacity in Utah?
They get 13,000.
Get 13, that's a big difference. It is a big, big difference. I just don't know how important home court is, and the play-in round does not work in favor of Utah. It may. I'm saying it doesn't right now, but let's just say some oddball way San Antonio gets in. Okay. That worked out okay for the Jazz, because you actually get the 10 seed.
You better hope it's not the Lakers. Because if you get the Lakers in round one, you're going out in the first round.
Even if you get past them in round one,
you're not getting out of the second round going against the Clippers.
You're in a dogfight.
Because the Clippers will dispatch the Mavericks in 5. And that's who they wanted, and that's who they're going to get. Now, maybe it backfires on them. I don't know.
Well, I would laugh if it did.
But Denver and the Clippers playing the tank game to avoid the Lakers kind of really put it to the Jazz just a little bit in that second round.
That's what they did, right? The tank game was to avoid the Lakers.
Yeah, you could see it. Denver rested everybody. The Clippers lost to Houston and Oklahoma City, who had combined, 2 wins over the past month.
Yeah. Yeah, that Clipper lineup yesterday was dreadful. Still, the Jazz have home court advantage. They are the best team record-wise in the NBA. And I, as a fan of basketball, and I can't stress this enough, Travis, I love the NBA, I love basketball. They were the most enjoyable team to watch during the regular season because as other teams embraced load management and jockeying for position. They did not do that. They did not do that, and Phoenix did not do that.
Yeah, those two are one of the top two teams healthiest all season long. Didn't lose a lot of games with their star player. We know Mitchell went out for about a month or so. But they played through the regular season. They've earned those top two spots, so kudos to them. And Philadelphia, I mean, they were healthy too.
Yep. Out of time of this edition of Drive Time Sports. I want to thank Coach Jim Jukes for taking out the time to join us. We'll start our baseball and softball recaps tomorrow, and we'll continue to talk some NFL. Great to see the guys back preparing for the upcoming season. Plus, we'll take a look at the schedule. That'll be on tap tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.